Also, the cat butts, their little buttholes are just X's.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk about Marvel's Netflix series Daredevil with our guest, Mark Sherman. And beware, we spoil the shit out of it.
We're geeks without God.
Hey, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
Hi there.
And today we're joined by our guest, Mark Sherman.
Hi.
Who is a friend of ours, and we're going to say Marvel expert.
Marvel expert Mark Sherman.
I feel special.
You've been granted it. It just happened. The title
happened.
You
can call yourself on that from now on.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's on record.
Yeah. And they don't give podcasts to just anybody.
That's right. True. You have to apply for a license.
Yeah. Right.
What?
Just like Fuck. Owning a...
Yeah.
Just like owning a ham radio.
Yeah.
And we are going to spoil the shit out of Daredevil.
Shit out of it.
If you haven't seen all the way through...
We're going
to
talk about...
Skip this one back.
The whole damn thing.
Come back to us.
If you haven't seen it and you give a fuck, I would stop listening. If you have seen it or you don't care, keep listening.
Yeah.
It's just that... We're going to spoil it like its last name was Kardashian.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Reality TV series.
Because they're wealthy and...
They're wealthy and spoiled.
Their priorities are out of whack.
Stupid spoiled bitches.
So, Daredevil.
Two names.
Charlie Cox, who you might know from Boardwalk Empire. He plays the IRA bootlegger, gangster, Nucky's right hand.
Sploosh.
He was in... Stardust.
Yeah, plays the lead in Stardust. Yeah.
I've never seen it still. I still haven't.
I should get you my copy of that. I enjoy it.
I think I've seen it the first 10 minutes.
My panties just coming off. Like, just... it's so cute.
And the accent doesn't hurt, I'm sure.
The accent does not hurt at all. Even his American accent, where he gets... When he
vaguely
gets,
tinged with Irish.
With the tinge of Irish vowels when he gets excited on the tops of his... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tops of mine.
And what's her name? Baby vampire Jessica is
Deborah Ann Wall.
That's right. She's our.
She's from True Blood.
Our pre-junkie Karen Page. Mm-hmm.
Is she pre-junkie?
It seems like they're dropping a lot of hints that
she's
might
drinking.
Be
she's drinking a lot.
Something.
Well, they definitely. There was some Ben Urich talking about your past, or you saw my past. You know about me, kind of a thing.
There's something. There's some dark stuff that happens.
And in the comics, that gets used against her in kind of a blackmail sense. She's the one that tells the Kingpin that he's Matt Murdock.
Sounds vaguely familiar, but to be perfectly honest, it's been a real long time since I've left.
The Born Again.
Yeah, that's
storyline. Yeah.
I don't know who plays Foggy. He was unknown to me prior to this, but
yeah, he's
great.
He's got a goofy name, I think.
Or as I said on Twitter, a shorter, fatter, less handsome Cargill.
It's right? The ginger hair.
It's the ginger hair and the wry smile. That's what it is.
I can see that. Yeah.
Tim, did you have any favorite particular badass moments?
I was just rewatching the last episode. We can talk about Fisk's arc more, and I'm sure we will.
Oh, absolutely.
But there's that moment when he's sitting in the police van after he's captured, and he's talking about the story of the Good Samaritan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I called, right? Like, it was like, there was a traveler on the side of the road beating him, and I was like, oh, this is the story of the Good Samaritan. This is going to be great.
And I liked that just for the point that, this whole series, Fisk is not willing to embrace his true nature.
It's his origin story. Yep. It's not Matt Murdock's origin story.
Matt Murdock is completely incidental to the story in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, so I love that. That was just Vincent D'Onofrio fucking killed Fisk.
Yeah.
Just killed that role.
So
and B,
good.
It was this so great hot. Moment where Fisk becomes Kingpin.
It's that moment. Yep. It's that speech in the back of that van.
And I realized I am not the Good Samaritan, and I am not the man on the side of the road.
Yeah.
I am the evil, the source of oppression.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm the evil man that...
That man shouldn't have been on that road. He had no place being on that road.
Mm-hmm.
And blaming the victim, kind of a... You know, in that vein, Vanessa was amazing. The Kingpin's mall love interest.
The subtle movement of Vanessa through the series was interesting to watch, from kind of a bystander all of a sudden, or dropped into this, but curious and just slowly more and more less concerned in a lot of ways for herself, it seems, and embracing this new thing that she is somehow allowed to be.
She started off so horrified by his violence in the restaurant and everything on their first date. She was just so like, oh God, oh, you're terrifying. And
I didn't take it that way. I took it as off-putting, as she felt like he had not... To me, I felt like her objection was more that he wasn't honest with her.
I kind of got that feeling, too.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that. I said last night as we were rewatching the finale that I'm glad they didn't kill her off, because I was worried they were going to with the poison thing. And I was like, God damn it. Like, she's so important to his story. But what I love is that while, yes, loving Vanessa, having Vanessa in his life does change Wilson Fisk and does soften him in certain ways and galvanize him in others, he changes her even more. Like, being with him really, because she becomes, in the comics at least, like a stone cold villain. Like, she is the
Kingpin for a while.
Yeah, for a while, and she takes over.
Arguably, she's worse than the Kingpin. The Kingpin always had grand schemes in the comics, but he had rules that he abided by. There was a game he was playing with an end goal, and she just, in the comics, her character turns into a person that just wants to, in a way, watch it burn.
Do you think that with him in jail at the end, and her
putting
the ring on and working with his men and going to wherever it is he sent her, that she's going to be taking over for at least a few episodes while he's in jail and trying to beat the charges?
I think I liked with the Kingpin, I mean, talking about his arc, I loved the... What you really understand, you know, when you get that scene where he's a 12-year-old and he kills his dad.
Yeah.
And what you come to understand through his behavior, even though he's trying to be a grown-up, is he never made it past that 12-year-old
child. No,
development was instantly arrested.
And you see that when he's sitting in the jail cell at the end, just staring at the wall.
Well, and I love that the kid they got for those scenes, too, because he is a short, stout little kid, but you can tell that he's going to be a big kid, you know, a big guy. But also, you can also see where, like, a mean, you know, asshole, drunk, abusive father would see him as soft. You know, soft, fat little mama's boy. Like, your mother coddles you. Oh, look at you, you fat little... And, like, even though they didn't really get into it that much, you could just feel it coming off the dad in, like, waves of just revulsion and jealousy and the whole, like, you know, this is obviously a boy that gets his mom's attention because he's a good boy and she needs something to dote on. And it's her only thought is that, well, at least the product of this marriage, at least I have Wilson. At least I have my son. And so I think that Vanessa might remind him of his mother some ways, because she's strong but delicate, and the protecting of women is an interesting thing.
Yeah, he's very protective of women, and yet at the same time, he doesn't have a problem with having them killed.
Right. Having them killed, but he doesn't kill any women, does he? Have we seen him kill a woman with himself?
I don't think so.
Yeah, which I don't know if that'll change, but I don't know if it's a purposeful distinction or not. But it may be that he doesn't lay hands on women because that's not what men do. And I could see that being a thing.
There is kind of he does seem to have like a code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, and I mean, clearly he's got aspects of his personality that is beholden to female power figures in his life. I mean, Vanessa is the first person who he allows into that world, probably since his mother. And you get the aspects that she helps change his his wardrobe. Mm-hmm. She removes those cufflinks from mm-hmm. him for the first time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is heavy symbolism that they had been seeding since the first full reveal of him
with the cufflinks, in the third yeah.
episode.
Yeah.
And they keep bringing it up and up and up. And when is that? Like episode 11?
It's like yeah. it's 10 or 11. Yeah. It's after the poisoning, but she's getting better. And yeah.
I think.
You know, and...
What? No, the cufflinks is when he comes. She changes the cufflinks in the episode where he actually comes out and does the press conference.
Oh, he's right.
Right.
It's for the
right.
press conference.
She's yeah. dressing yeah. him for that press conference.
I love that everyone that no one ever seems to think that he's going to kill them. And it's because no one has ever seen him. The only people who ever see that side of him end up dead immediately yeah. afterward. Mm-hmm. So, like, we have seen him go from 0 to 100 and choke the shit out of Ben Urich.
Or ruin an SUV.
Right, yeah. But then Owsley is, like, taunting him practically. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. like you, what did you think we were going to
every
do?
Every time Owsley is disrespectful to him from the beginning, you're like, mm-hmm. are you stupid?
I know, and all
are
I
you
could...
unaware? And clearly he
yeah.
is.
We're sitting
unaware.
Watching and it's like, oh, he has no idea. He thinks yeah. he's just dealing with a very, like, strong businessman.
Well, secretive guy.
Yeah.
He's
like,
got shady underpinning.
He does not realize who he's dealing with.
In this Netflix version, Leland Owsley is a strictly white-collar criminal, like, mm-hmm. with the exception of the poisoning, I think, is the most, like, mm-hmm. not accounting type mm-hmm. criminal act he does.
But at the same time, like, he's very cowardly, he's very protective of his own interests, and the poisoning fits in with that sort of
all
thing.
That fits. Oh, yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
For and all we know, he's done it before.
With whatever her name is, who we're pretty sure is Crane Mother, but...
Madam Gao.
Who's clearly from Kunlun.
You're right, she's
like,
totally
100% from Kunlun, so, the way she's like, home is a bit further away than China.
Well,
and it's
she
like,
turns around and disappears.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
When she punches Matt Murdock when he's wearing the black mask, she clearly does like a chi punch thing. Like, they really mm-hmm. emphasize that this little old woman gave him a little palm punch and yeah. sent him spinning across the room. Like, it wasn't normal. So those of you that don't know, Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction, Immortal Iron
yeah,
Fist?
Yeah, it's Brubaker and Fraction with, and I'm going to butcher this last name because I have no idea how to pronounce it, but David, I think, Aya?
AJA.
I think it's Aja.
I think so. The guy that does Hawkeye with Matt Fraction.
Yeah. Yep.
They did a run on the Immortal Iron Fist shortly after, I think, Bendis's run on Daredevil was over, where they kind of reinvented the character, added a lot of new backstory to it, made it a very, Shangri-La-esque kung fu origin.
What's the place where Batman goes? Just where, what's his name?
Ra's al Ghul.
Where Ra's al Ghul is from, like that whole it's
like
Kunlun. Kunlun is like that, but it's also kind of a weird trans-dimensional place, maybe, or
it's magic.
It's like that. It's
an interdimensional space that exists partially buried in Earth, populated by alien plant creatures from another dimension that look like humans.
Which all gets retconned, more or less.
Yeah.
These comic books are super realistic.
Yeah. But all you need to know is it's kung fu magic,
right.
there's going to be an Iron Fist show.
Right.
Madam Gao clearly has some kung fu magic.
The last Netflix Marvel series before The Defenders, where they all come together, will be Iron Fist with Danny Rand. And so... one of these other immortal weapons, these other, like, representations or avatars of these immortal cities are, like, Wolf Brother and Fat Cobra and those folks.
Daughter of Spider.
Bride of
Spiders.
It's Bride.
And then there's a Tiger one,
too. The Bride of Spiders is horrible to read.
And so one of these is Iron Fist's... Nemesis, Davos, who becomes the Steel Serpent. Well, the Steel Serpent symbol that's on his chest is the symbol that's on the heroin packets that are going around.
And there is an older and woman, Crane Mother.
Crane Mother is the one who turns Davos into Steel Serpent.
So it's the fact that her heroin business is using that symbol and everything, it's pretty clear that it's very
there is certainly a hint being placed there.
Yeah.
And I like that they take their time getting to even anything that's remotely mystical about that aspect of it, they ground it for a real long time, and then vaguely there's just a tiny hint of something otherworldly actually happening. Yeah.
Well, all the magic so far in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been Asgardian stuff that's easily dismissed as sufficiently advanced technology.
Yeah, hand-wavy science.
Or,
stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything that's been inherently magical.
Well, it's
going
to change
yet.
When they bring in Doctor Strange. When they do Cumber Strange, that's going to have to change because Doctor Strange is a magician.
They are rumored that he is,
he's a fucking,
is going to
he's
make
a sorcerer.
His appearance in Iron Fist.
Oh, that'd be so great.
That'd be fantastic.
Cumber Strange.
don't they still have to make it official, though?
I think they did.
Yeah.
Molly, did you have a favorite Daredevil aspect of the show?
I loved the fight choreography. There were so many moments where I was just like, oh, fuck, like, because it was so good and so fast.
Old boy.
It was very old boy. It was very, he fought in a way that made sense. He fought, like,
recklessly.
He fought recklessly, but with precision. So it looked like he, because you would think, like, how does he know where he's going? But he I don't know, his movements, that he used his whole, he looked like he grew up street fighting. He used the whole area around him. He climbed walls. He uses things that he would pick up and in the alley. I loved the final fight between Kingpin and Daredevil because he was, you know, fighting a much bigger opponent. And so the way that he fought changed.
Kind of get steamrolled for a little while.
It was. I really liked all that, but in terms of like story and narrative, I'm trying to think. I just loved all of it so much.
There were like three or four fight scenes that lasted longer than 5 minutes.
There was that old boy style one in the hallway that was so fucking good.
I read somewhere that they actually did do that in one take.
There wasn't
a lot of trickery shots in there.
And
the way they set that shot up to begin with, they do a slow pan through the scene, showing you inside all of the doors, panning back out, and then turning around and...
Yep.
And so they establish, here's where all the people are.
Yeah.
And they do the shot of the fight mostly from the hallway. And my understanding is that they have his stunt double, like, off camera in a room. So you'll see our main actor for a little while. He'll go off camera, and then shit's happening off camera. Mm-hmm. They aren't showing it. And then the stunt double's in.
That makes sense.
And then he'll go off camera again, and they'll bring him back in again, so that they were able to switch out the stunt double with the main actor without having to do any cuts. And so that's why there are times where you'll see, aside from the fact that it's pretty fucking cool, you see him go into a room where you know there are four guys, and you see all four guys come flying out of the room, and you don't see what happens. You just know he fucked them up.
It's great.
When that camera goes in, like you're talking about, and kind of scopes through and shows you everything, I just can't help but to think that was a really clever way of showing his radar stuff going on without using a cheesy effect. There's very little of that. I feel like his powers were very well represented by cinemagraphic tricks and cinematography. Just like how they introduce you to a scene or to a fight or to a character. Or even just the actor's expressions, really.
Yeah.
You could tell when he was... something wasn't right or when someone was lying without showing us a heartbeat on the bottom of the screen or anything. It was...
They handled his powers really well. I also liked that his costume, almost until the very end,
was
just what you... like. Black clothes and the black mask tied around his eyes. And
why would a blind guy care about aesthetics?
But not only that, but it's like, that's always one of my least favorite parts of any superhero origin, is where it's like, and then they show a sewing montage and a sketching montage and a I'm making my costume montage. The only time it's ever worked is Kick-Ass, because he's trying to be like the comic books. Every other time it's when they're trying to make it real, it's like, who would be like, why wouldn't he just be like, all right, I got, you know, my black clothes and I'm going to fight in so I can be, you know, hiding, and let's do this scarf mask thing because I don't need to see and it'll freak people out.
I think they did a good job there too with his costume, his body armor.
At the end? Oh, yeah. The black parts will deflect this, the red parts not so much, you know,
How does Matt Murdock know which parts are black and red?
Hold it in the light and see which parts get hotter.
There you go.
He did reach in and touch like this. He touched two places, and I think maybe he can feel
the texture.
The texture would be different. Yeah. I mean, if they're different materials, it would feel different.
Mark, did you have a favorite part or aspect of?
Yeah, the sound design.
Mm.
Nick, Molly, and I all watched it in one shot, all 13 hours.
It was a slog.
Started at like noon, and
plus about 3 hours of extra
of
time
eating
in there.
And other things. I fell asleep.
We started at noon and finished at around 3.
I fell asleep halfway through episode 12 and did not awaken for episode 13. Full disclosure, but that's all right. I woke up back. And watched it later.
Yeah.
But we watched it in a very comfortable living room setting with a nice 5.1 audio system. And
thank you.
Hey, it sounded good.
It did.
And it sounded good. I mean, if you're doing a character who's primarily blind with enhanced senses, who gets most of his information auditorily, mm-hmm. then you need to pay special attention to it. And I really feel that they did an excellent job of doing positional effects or cueing you in with audio and mm-hmm. making it noticeable when you were supposed to pick something up.
Yeah.
They didn't beat your head over your head with it.
It wasn't like it was gimmicky, but it was particular and it was precise. And there wasn't an overwhelming amount of like big orchestral scores throughout it. It wasn't mm-hmm. bombastic. It was in a lot of ways subtle. And on top of that, when you got those fight scenes and they were doing all their creative panning and shots so that they could swap in characters or do whatever else they needed mm-hmm. to, when people weren't on screen, it was almost more explicit because of the hard meat packing sounds and
some
bone
guy was really
crunching
punching
aesthetics.
Some beef sides.
You know, they it shows that they understand what they're trying to get across with this character, and that they understand how this character is supposed to be interpreted inside of the world that they're trying to present.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciated that level of detail.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of blood in this show, too.
Yeah, well.
It was the fights were brutal.
There's head soup. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
He crushes
the Russian's head.
See the guy's head get caved in, but you see his head slosh out of the vehicle after it's liquefied.
Well, in the episode 3, when Matt's coming back from the one with the redhead guy that they pick up. That's episode 2, the one with the guy who destroys another man with a bowling ball.
Yeah.
And then they take him on as a client, mm-hmm. and at the end, after he gives up Fisk's name,
he
plunges
himself.
His eyeball into something.
Yeah,
It was good.
It's nice that Netflix is great for that. You can do things, and I don't want to disparage like Flash or Arrow or any of there are some really good comic book shows going on regular network television, but you can't do that kind of visceral brutality mm-hmm. that seems to fit with Daredevil more.
Yeah.
It's definitely thematically appropriate to the setting, if not the character. The Hell's Kitchen heroes are brutal. I mean, you're talking about like the Punisher and Luke Cage and
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel's street level characters, or the Marvel Knights line, I guess, would be the appropriate way of phrasing that. They're so,
Knights with a K.
Yes. they're all very gritty and dark. I mean, the comics themselves are epitomized by their heavy inking and monochromatic toning for their images on mm-hmm. there, and realistic artists. You know, you don't find cartoony guys, the same kind of guys that would be on like a Spider-Man book or an X-Men book, working on those titles.
They're that superhero proportions, the body proportions are more realistic.
Yeah, I mean,
Daredevil for a long time had almost a photorealism art that was like a watercolor photorealism that was just beautiful.
Was,
I don't know if it was Alex Ross,
Malieve?
But it was
no.
Malieve.
Well,
yeah,
was
Malieve.
Alex Malieve.
Alex
yeah.
Malieve. Yeah.
Malieve. Malieve. Something like
whichever.
That.
Whichever.
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
I think if I had to pick a favorite part, for me, it was a lot of really little things that were, I felt like, not necessary to enjoy the show, but were rewards if you were familiar with the comic.
Ah, yes.
The guy who makes the armor is Melvin Potter, who is the gladiator whose weapon is saw blades and a wrist-mounted saw blade shooter. And the first thing he does when Matt Murdock breaks in is he throws a saw blade at him.
And they had schematics later.
And they had schematics, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then in the background of his workshop, you can see Stiltman's ridiculous stilt pants. And he's Melvin Potter's really worried about, is it Betty?
Betty.
Yeah.
Who's his caseworker in the comics, because he's not all there. He doesn't quite have all his faculties.
Betsy.
So he's really worried about her. And Night Nurse. They didn't name her as such, but just the inclusion of her. I mean, she's Stephen Strange's love interest for a while.
Yeah. Her character is kind of a combination of Night Nurse with another character from a group of three nurses that were introduced, I think, in an earlier Daredevil series. Huh. But they made their intention clear that she is supposed to be Night Nurse, and I hope they keep Rosario Dawson around for that, because she was great in that role. Her relationship with Matt was awesome, and her realistic take on the situation was fantastic as well. It's like, you're clearly helping people in this neighborhood. I'm going to stick my neck out for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were willing to, or if you're not willing to take care of yourself better,
you're not of any use.
Yep.
The mention from Vanessa on their date of the cravat and vest, the guy who tried to impress her with his flashy clothes, he's wearing a blue cravat and a vest and a purple pants and a white suit. I mean, she just describes the Kingpin from the comics.
Most notorious. That's
horrible. So, the show's been approved for a second season next year. They're already getting ready to start writing and shooting, later this year we get AKA Jessica Jones,
Alias. Oh my god, I'm so excited for Jessica Jones.
Next year we get season 2 of Daredevil and then Luke Cage.
Is it Luke Cage at the same time as season 2 of Daredevil?
It's or the same year at least. Sure. So the order is Daredevil, AKA Luke Cage, Iron Fist, then Defenders. But obviously, if any of those get sequels, they're going to be kind of overlapping to some degree.
That's great, because they can do so much with a Luke Cage series running in parallel with a Daredevil series.
Or
Jessica Jones. I mean, those in the early 2000s, those books were all so intertwined with one another.
And good.
Well, I mean, the director that they have for Luke Cage is the guy who wrote the biography and did the documentary version of the biography for Biggie Smalls. Notorious. That's who is in charge of Luke Cage, which I think is promising. Mm-hmm. I hope that we get to see Luke Cage in AKA Jessica Jones before he makes an appearance in Luke Cage, because he's her superpowered booty call, because she has powers and she kind of needs someone that has powers.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Maybe resents them a little bit.
Maybe. There's some self-hate.
She's super strong. She needs a dick that won't break off.
Right.
He's got unbreakable skin.
Yeah.
It's a match made in heaven.
Yeah. And there's... so if you haven't seen Daredevil and you don't mind seeing a show that we all just talked about, you should really check it out. It's
absolutely
great. Unless you have an aversion to good things or violence, those are the only two reasons I could see to not watch it.
Yeah, I'm not as much of a comic nerd as you guys. I love comics. I just don't get around to reading them. So I didn't have the history with Daredevil, but I sure did get into it. And it's because I think the storytelling was really well done.
I don't think it detracts. It just adds.
They made you care about everybody. I cared about Fisk, even though
the most he's
a brutal, horrible killer,
and
willing to take out old ladies and all this other shit to get what he wants. And what he wants is not really all that great.
No, but like all the best villains, he just wants to reshape the world to make it better.
Yeah.
Because it'll be better if he's in charge.
When they kill Wesley, I was I liked Wesley a lot. Even though, again, he's just a slimy motherfucker.
Two quick things. I was so disappointed that they killed Ben Urich.
Agreed.
Yeah. 100%.
And I thought he would have been the perfect axis or interconnecting thread that would bring all these different Netflix shows together. And now, I mean, they could still do that with Night Nurse.
Yeah.
But it's a shame because he's a great character and he was so well cast and acted.
And to be fair, they surprised the shit out of me when they did it because I'm like, oh, they're not going to kill
right.
Ben Urich.
Right. What were
you gonna say about,
I was just going to say that outside of him being important in this particular series, there's just so much more potential you can do with a perspective from outside of any of these characters like they did in the comics with the Frontline series, which was basically focused on here are non-powered reporters talking about and dealing with the impacts of powered or masked characters in their city from a ground mm-hmm. level perspective.
Yeah.
You know, looking up at these giants and reacting to that sort of thing. And it was a perspective that you just don't always get.
Which leads very nicely, or at least sets a very nice stage for Civil War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's part of the themes of Civil War. No matter what they do with it, part of the themes are look at our city. Look what these people with powers are doing to regular people and our possessions and our buildings.
Stanford situation. There's one of my favorite Daredevil stories. Daredevil is like not in, and it's told entirely from the perspective of Ben Urich investigating this crime that resolved itself. And it was Daredevil like is in like the very last panel in the background, a silhouette or something. It's great storytelling. But anyway, we should move on to five questions. You feel prepared, Mark? You feel ready?
I have notes.
Oh, all right.
Oh, wow, that's super prepared.
Tim, you
all right. Question number one: what's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days in theater or not?
Okay. I've been moving and dealing with life crises, so I have not been dealing or doing so much watching movies. But if you'll give me 5 more days on that,
yes. All right. I think we can accept that.
The best thing that I've watched recently outside of Age of Ultron, which I thoroughly enjoyed, was a fan edit of the original Star Wars called The War of the Stars.
Is that the Grindhouse?
It is the Grindhouse.
It's the Grindhouse one.
I haven't watched it yet.
Awesome.
I was running a volunteer screening at the little movie theater that I help run.
The Trilon,
The
right?
Trilon, yeah. Yep. And we... I picked this because I hadn't seen it yet, and it seemed on April Fool's Day that it was the most appropriate thing to do with all of the employees. So it was thoroughly satisfying in a very different way that Star Wars was. I like the original Star Wars. I love the original Star Wars in its own way, but I'm going to say that it's probably not the best movie ever. I think it's probably a little too long, and I think it's a little one note, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It was not really anything more than what it wanted to be, and this kind of takes that and runs with it in a different direction. You know, I think they chop like 45 minutes out of the movie.
Oh, wow.
Resplice in about 15 minutes or so of material cut from other sources.
Troops.
There's a little bit of troops that's in there.
The cops parody of Stormtroopers, right?
There's sections from, they were pulled out of like deleted sequences, some stuff that I'd never actually seen before in there. They really pump up the relationship between Biggs and Luke, and you get to see like a side of him that's a little bit more whiny, which
more whiny.
Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe.
Seriously, like more whiny.
Oh God, I was gonna watch this, but now I was thinking I'm gonna be sick.
But it's done to really good effect. But there's even like, you know, there's a lot of jokey, campy stuff in there. They also replace a good chunk of the movie with like a copy, like a bit of like a 16mm film that clearly been dragged across the floor of a projection booth a couple of times. Scrubbed in a whole bunch of new special effects when Darth Vader uses force powers. His eyes glow red, and they chop in a bunch of lines from other movies that James Earl Jones, thank you, has been in that maybe don't always work, but you can add a Darth Vader filter on it, and you can make a little comedy.
All the laser, the blasters have like leave bleeding wounds and holes, and it's bloody and grindhousey. Sure.
Question number two, who is your favorite atheist character?
It took me a while to come up with something on this one. I had originally gone with or thought of Gordon Freeman, but that seemed a little bit too much of a cop-out because, you know, it's a voiceless character, so you can really put whatever perspective you want on it.
Fair enough.
Outside of that, you can embody bits and pieces of it, but being that it's a scientist, I don't know, it didn't seem to quite work for this, but I settled on a Christian Walker.
Oh, Powers.
Powers.
Boy.
Not the television show.
Oh, no. God, no.
That doesn't exist.
Nope.
Not no, they never made a television show, you guys. I wish they had.
Yeah. You know, and
I didn't even know there was a television show.
There isn't.
Don't watch it. Just read it.
Yeah. You know, and they don't really ever truly deal specifically with religion in the Powers series, but there's a really great moment in, like, the 2008 annual where they're going through the history of the character, and you find out that he's been around since... Potentially, he was an
early man.
That sort of thing. The pre-dawn of man.
Yeah.
And one of the incarnations of the character winds up you know, it's like a Cro-Magnon clan leader against like a warlord of some sort who has defeated the cave bear, which all the people have been worshiping as a god.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember this moment where, you know, the two of them are squaring off and he is the Bloodfist, I think, is the guy's name, something like that, has declared himself a god amongst all these others. And Christian Walker's Gore, I think, in the character, just declares, "You're not a god, we're both just men." You know, and thousands of years later, this is the character that's still under the core of that. And again, while it's not explicit, it seems like... it's implied that...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, he kills a god, more or less. I mean, question number three, what's your geekiest hobby?
Okay.
I can think of a few of yours.
I collect geeky hobbies, but in particular, the most egregious example, I think, is my collection of... role-playing rule system books that I have. That I've never actually played.
Yeah.
I collect them. I read them cover to cover most of the time.
Well, sure. Why would you buy them if you're not going to read them cover to cover?
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell?
And I'd love to play half of these things, but I love getting into the mechanics of this stuff. I love reading the different rule sets and finding out how this system resolves this kind of situation versus this one, and the free form mechanics over here versus the hard numbers that this system relies on.
Grid based versus range versus
and heavy mechanics versus storytelling and
And on top of that, you get the lore. And that's important to me too, reading this sort of element of this is what these people have put their heart into to create this world, to make these numbers and math have any value in the long run. And I think that's beautiful.
So. I'm excited for you to read Force and Destiny core book. It's going to be really good. It's good. I proofread it. It's fucking great. It's,
Question number four, what's your favorite sandwich?
Okay.
Sandwich.
I'm going to read this verbatim from my notes here.
All right.
Because I know you guys like specifics.
Oh, yeah.
I do.
All right. So my favorite sandwich is a Cuban sandwich, made mostly traditionally. Flaky Cuban bread, which I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it's kind of a halfway between like an Italian and a French bread.
It's kind of a boule,
usually
but it's like that like light crust with like rich
sauce,
it's gonna have like a fat in it, usually lard or vegetable oil to give it a little bit more of a springy and probably pork lard
because it's Cuban.
A little butter, seedy brown mustard, grilled ham, slow roasted pork.
Is the best.
Yes, it is. Roasted pork with knots of crispy edges on it because that's the best part of it. Really powerful garlicky dill pickle slices on top. And this Vlasic vinegary bullshit. I'm not having any of that stuff right there.
Like a sweet garlic pickle or like a bread and butter garlic a dill?
Dill garlic pickle. Like a cold pickle, not a cooked pickle.
Yeah.
Some Swiss slowly melting on top and
And that sounds fucking delicious.
And I'm sorry you can't experience
that's anti-Nick, but that's fine.
It could be turkey pork. Turkey shaped like pork.
Someone fucks a bird.
Question number 5. What's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism, agnosticism, however you want to phrase it?
Well, you know, I was raised in a vaguely obscure denomination of Catholicism. We were Ukrainian Catholic.
Oh, I've been to a Ukrainian wedding. They're long.
They're super long.
They're like 4 hours.
And they're in languages that I never understood.
There's a lot of walking in circles. It's amazing.
There's all kinds of stuff like that. But you get the Slavic choruses, though, men's choirs and that sort of thing. So there's a little bit of a different pomp to it.
Super pagan. It's Catholicism.
Eastern Orthodox version, right?
Yeah, it's not Eastern Orthodox. There is a Ukrainian Orthodox
Eastern Orthodox is like all of these, because like there's a Greek Orthodox and
there's Roman
and Ukrainian
Catholic
Orthodox.
We prayed towards Rome, not Turkey.
All right.
There was a different sect that that went towards the other pope.
Do they? They follow the Roman pope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Are there Catholics that don't follow the Roman
pope? Yes, there's a Turkish pope.
I don't know these things. I don't Catholicism
Eastern,
is kind of a blind
Eastern
spot.
Eastern Orthodoxy is like there's a schism in the Catholic Church where you've got the Roman Catholics and you've got the Eastern Orthodox Catholics.
Yeah.
But then the Eastern Orthodox, the Roman Catholics are remarkably cohesive as opposed to the Eastern Orthodox, which then splinter further.
It's like if you think of Catholic and Protestant, and then Protestant, there's like
No, I get it.
But so, you know, there was always a little bit of oddness related to some of that. But, you know, I gave up on religion a while ago, before I really got through all of this stuff. And, you know, it didn't make my parents particularly happy once they found out that I was. So for a number of years, I got a lot of backhanded sort of, wouldn't you like to be with your parents after you die?
Ah, that old guilt trip. Nice. Yep.
Which is always fun. It was always kind of half-hearted, but you could tell like there was some sincerity behind it.
Oh, sure.
You don't usually say something like that out loud unless there's some...
Yeah.
Some worry. I mean, did your mom... I mean, like...
My mom has never said anything like that.
Yeah, like my father said that to me when I first told him. He was like, oh, so I guess I guess you just don't care about being with me after you're dead. And he was like, I don't. Okay.
Yeah. That was... I mean, it wasn't fine. You know, that's certainly not a good way of going about it. But... eventually they accepted kind of who I was and whatnot.
Sure.
But honestly, the dumbest but slightly satisfying thing that was ever said to me was after our recent Pope Frank started making a lot of his new news when he was coming into power, and he declared that as long as we all live good lives, we're all going to go to heaven anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, so the dumbest thing I would ever have to say was oh, don't worry, you're good.
You're going to heaven anyway.
We're fine because you're going to heaven anyway.
Yesterday, you weren't going to heaven, but the Pope said today you are. Mm-hmm. So today, if you'd died yesterday, Mark, you would have been burning in hell for eternity. But since the Pope said today, it's okay.
But also,
thank God.
A couple of days later, the Vatican was like, well, what he meant was.
I know, it's not what he meant, guys. Yeah.
You might think he's infallible and he's the mouthpiece of God, but actually, let us add an asterisk.
There's a bit of a committee situation here.
You just need to understand what he was saying.
Yeah, no, he just misunderstood God, clearly.
Well, I think we started with a character with strong Catholic ties, and we're ending on the note of Catholicism. That was another great part in the show. The priest totally knows that he is Daredevil. I mean, come on, he knows. That's true to form. Good old guilty Catholic Matt Murdock.
Bless me, Father, for I will sin.
Yeah. That could just be like the subtitle to Daredevil.
I'm sure that's just the title in Japan. Like, that's just
Well, thanks, Mark, for talking about Daredevil with us and answering our 5 questions.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
If any of you listeners want to add something you particularly loved about Daredevil or hated about Daredevil or...
Are we totally wrong for liking the series? Are we like just...
No, you're wrong.
You're wrong.
if you say, oh yeah, it's just like Arrow, then I just want you to let you know that you're...
Wrong.
You're right, but you're wrong because it's better.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong.
We have been Geeks Without God, and you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Please leave us an iTunes rating. That's always nice. And we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Blind Batman.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Until next time. You can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks. Geeks without God.
And we're done, and I have to pee.
All right, pee it up. I'll pee after you.